Hey, you want that to go?
Now, some quick takeouts on stories we're following this week. Go to Todd Zwillick, Takeaways Washington correspondent. So the health care debate starts today. There's a lot of amendments that are going to be proposed beginning tomorrow. How long is this amendment process expected to take?
Dozens of amendments, Celeste. Democrats were hopeful to get this bill off the floor by Christmas time. It's looking increasingly unlikely that that can happen. There are a lot of issues roiling around health care. We've been talking about them. Of course, the public option. You can't forget about Medicare, the overall cost of the bill, and by the way, abortion. The key on the health care debate right now is that there don't appear to be 60 votes for any approach. So that means a lot of negotiation and a lot of horse trading and a lot of voting before Harry Reid can find a way off the floor with this bill. It's unclear at this point.
Okay, so let's move on to the job summit. There's going to be a White House job summit at the end of the week. Many people are saying this is just going to be a photo opportunity. Is it just all staging, or is it something expected to come out of this summit?
Well, the White House end of things may be staging and a photo opportunity, but the president has also said he wants Congress to act quickly on a jobs bill. Democrats are extremely nervous about 10.2% unemployment. You know, take them at their word. That's bad for people, and they're concerned about it. Fine. They're also concerned about themselves. You can't win an election in 2010 with unemployment this high. So they're looking at a bill that may have tax cuts for businesses to hire people, certainly extensions for unemployment insurance, maybe some spending on highways and infrastructure. The one tough part about this, though, is that Harry Reid in the Senate can't get onto a jobs bill that the president wants without 60 votes because he's on the health care bill now. So it's unclear how they get that done before Christmas.
Okay. And they're also going to hear Federal Reserve Chairman Ben Bernanke coming to Capitol Hill to defend his handling of the economy.
Fed chairman and punching bag this week. There's a lot of frustration on the Hill and out there in America about the economy. Ben Bernanke needs to be reconfirmed for his second term as Fed chairman. He has a confirmation hearing on Thursday, Celeste. There's a lot of angry senators with angry constituents, and you can bet that they're going to project a lot of their anger about the economy right onto Bernanke on Thursday.
Okay, thanks so much. Three big things to watch for this week. Todd Zwillick is our Washington correspondent.
And Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, Takeaway Sports contributor, joins us. It was a balmy week. Weekend in New York, but boy, for basketball fans, it's going to be a cold winter. A little history in the NBA is made over the weekend. You've got the longest losing streak by the New Jersey Nets in the history of the NBA.
Well, they matched the longest losing streak, and if they lose another one, then they're going to be going down in the infamous part of NBA history, for sure.
And they're competing with the hapless Knicks, who are already as bad as they can possibly be.
The Knicks are having one of the worst starts of their franchise, and then they're stringing together the longest stretch of non-playoff appearances ever in the history of the Knicks.
And anybody who follows the NBA these days is not surprised by any of this. The Nets and the Knicks, they stink.
It's true.
But the interesting history for me is this Twitter story of the NBA.
One second, John. I just have to Twitter this real quick. One second.
So Twittering in the middle of a game. It's actually a story.
Mark Cuban last March was fined $25,000 for Twittering. And
he's the owner of the Dallas Mavericks.
Correct. They fined him $25,000. So this $7,500 that they fined Phoenix Suns, Amari Stoudemire, and the Charlotte Bobcats for Tyson Chandler, the $7,500 that they fined each of them for tweeting during the game on Wednesday in halftime. So I think the fines are worth it, but
Though. I think the NBA is like missing the boat here. This is like an opportunity for them. Why are they cracking down on the players? Of course you want to get a Twitter from Shaq in the middle of the game.
I think it's message control. And the other thing it's connected to is when players go on trips, they wear suits and ties. And some teams have specific dress codes, so it's similar to that dress code. It's their modicum of how they're supposed to present themselves as an NBA player.
I don't know. It seems to me like maybe an opportunity is being lost here. You can't stop the 21st century, even if you're the NBA. But it's an interesting story. Ibrahim Abdul-Mateen, Takeaway Sports contributor. Thanks so much.
Hey, good morning.
And now a takeout on media and reality show stars. Brian Stelter's joined us. He writes the Media Decoder blog for our partner in the New York Times. Here's the story. The couple that crashed President Obama's White House dinner is not talking about it unless they're paid. Tarek and Michaela Salahi canceled their tonight's interview with Larry King, and they're asking for up to $500,000 to do an interview about the incident. Brian, big news networks generally do not pay people to interview them.
They do not, and I think they especially generally do not pay for an interview like this. An interview that, you know, a week from now, a month from now, hopefully we're not even going to remember this story. So to expect $500,000 for it seems fanciful in some ways.
Someone will probably pay $500,000, though, right?
you know, it's possible that one of these, you know, supermarket tabloids might pay something, but I think $500,000 is a stretch for anybody. You know, I think if we see them on NBC, it'll be an indication that this couple is going to show up on Bravo after all. As we know, they've been contending for the Real Housewives of D.C. If they end up on NBC, I think that's an indication they actually are going to get a show. They're actually going to get on the show. But you know, the more people I talk to this weekend, the more it seems like they're not going to actually show up on this show ever.
Nobody's really going to care. You know, this and the Balloon Boy incident are just reminders to us of how reality shows are really influencing reality, everyone's real life. Is there an end to the American appetite for reality shows and the people who appear on them?
You know, according to the ratings, there's not. But I'd like to see an ombudsman, you know, for these shows. This was suggested over the weekend on a website called The Wrap. An ombudsman that can make sure the casting's not getting out of hand. Because lately we've had some kind of scary incidents where casting's gone awry on these shows. And maybe what we need is a little bit more, some sort of standards that are applied when it comes to picking the contestants for these shows.
I love that, Brian. Someone in Hollywood whose job it is to determine what is real reality.
And who's a normal person to be cast on the show and who is not. Brian Stelter writes the Media Decoder blog for our partner, the New York Times. $500,000.
We'll pay it. Well, why don't we just say, sure, we'll pay you $500,000. Come on the show. Come on.
And then we don't have $500,000.
Well, then we won't pay them.
Then
what
they
can
won't
they do?
Come on the
what
show.
What are they going to do? What are they going to do? It's a reality
show. What are they going to talk about anyway? They're
show.
Just going to talk about walking through the White House and shaking people's hands. Yeah. I don't want to do that in my own life.
It's a reality show. Call the takeaway. We'll just have it on.
I don't know.
We'll pay you.
No more reality show,
we'll do
please.
A pledge drive.
You come to the New Yorker Radio Hour for conversations that go deeper with people you really want to hear from, whether it's Bruce Springsteen or Questlove or Olivia Rodrigo, Liz Cheney, or the godfather of artificial intelligence, Jeffrey Hinton, or some of my extraordinarily well-informed colleagues at The New Yorker. So join us every week on the New Yorker Radio Hour, wherever you listen to podcasts.